Relationships rule. That's my motto. I'm Janice Porter, and I love to share the power of relationship marketing to help grow and impact business. I've grown my business by building and nurturing relationships, and I'd like to help you do the same. Welcome to the Relationships Rule podcast, where connection means everything. Hello, hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Relationships Rule. On today's episode, I'm joined by Michael Haynes, all the way from Sydney, Australia, a seasoned business-to-business strategist, consultant, and the author of the book Listen, Innovate, Grow. Michael has spent over 20 years helping small and mid-sized professional service firms acquire, grow, and retain business clients. In a business-to-business world where needs are shifting fast, he believes that the firms who adapt and innovate around client value are the ones that will thrive. Today, we'll look at how building strong strategic relationships isn't just good business, it's essential for long-term success. So welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you, Janice. It's great to be here. I'm very much looking forward to our conversation.
Me too. So let's start with the fact that you've worked with a wide range of firms across different industries. How would you define client value in today's B2B landscape?
Great question, Janice. So in terms of client value, the key to B2B success, it is not just enough for us to be client-centric. So for example, if you're an IT firm and you're trying to get into, let's say, Air Canada, for say, as an example, it is not enough to be concerned at the client level, the needs and concerns of Air Canada. If you're working, let's say, in a particular area, let's say their cybersecurity strategy area, you need to know the buyer priorities. So who are the decision makers relevant or your area of opportunity? So in the case of that cybersecurity firm, they need to know who are the decision makers with respect to Air Canada's cybersecurity strategies. What are their priorities? How do they buy? Where are they looking value? What are they looking to achieve? So you have to be buyer-centric in order to succeed in B2B. Being client-centric is not enough. You must go to that level of the decision maker, that buyer level. That is where the magic happens. Janice, that is where a lot of the relationships need to be built, cultivated, and maintained.
So let me clarify that then, because in my mind, I guess one would I didn't think this way, but what you're saying is making me think that when you say client value, it means the end user, but it really doesn't. It's the person in that, whoever you call them buyers, they're your client. They're
your buyer. Yeah. You need to be thinking in a business to business context, who are the decision makers, those who make the decision and those who influence the decision.
Right.
You have to really understand. Yeah. So who they are, what are their priorities? What are their needs, objectives, expectations, and how do they make their buying decision, whether they're going to go with your consulting firm or another consulting firm, your law firm versus the other? You
Right.
need to understand those three key questions, and that is whom you need to be delivering and be focusing on.
Right. And so that kind of leads right away, though, into your framework AIR. Because you have to, in order to get that information, you have to be a good listener, right? You have to. And so I'd like you to walk us through what your AIR framework stands for and how it applies to building those relationships.
Great question, Jess. I'm going to take a little bit of a step back.
Sure.
So first principles, when we're talking about our world of B2B professional services, I do a lot of work with accounting firms, CFO advisory firms, technology firms, and a bit of work with law firms to a degree. Irrespective, in the world of B2B professional services, there's been a lot of research, Janice, that has been done by the likes of the HINS Research Institute in Washington, who their whole world is about measuring, monitoring, and understanding our world of B2B professional services. Our buyers of accounting services, consulting services, technology services, legal services, our buyers, the number one thing that they're looking for is expertise and depth of expertise. This has been proven through the studies by Hinge, Forrester, Gartner, and many others. Therefore, for us, our core underlying premise of how we run our accounting firms, technology firms, consulting firms, is that we need to deliver that expertise through what I call AIR: advice, insights, and recommendations to those decision makers key priorities, challenges, and objectives, because that's the number one thing that they're looking for. Therefore, your whole go-to-market strategy, your whole way of doing business must be grounded in understanding and providing advice, insights, and recommendation to those who make the decisions and those make influencing the decision as with respect to choice of professional services provider. That really needs to be the grounding principles of how you operate your firm.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, and it is a lot, Janice. It is a lot. But the expectations of buyers of professional services, the bar is very high now.
Yes, I hear that.
The bar is very high. Your buyers now, when they're looking to buy consulting services, when you're dealing with MDs, senior execs of organizations, they're thanks to the internet, they're very well versed on, they know their industries, they know the industries or dynamics, their clients. They're really looking for people to provide advice on what are the best practices, what are the upcoming trends, what are the broad changing customer end user needs, what are some of the regulatory changes, what are the new opportunities that they should be looking for. They're really looking for that advisor to advise them on, what types of solutions, how do I build that great comprehensive solution bundle of products and services and programs that are going to attract those clients that I seek. These are the kinds of ideas, insights. Who are the providers I should be considering? Who should I possibly be collaborating? These are the advice, the insights, the information, the ideas that the buyers of professional services are seeking and they're wanting from professional service providers. And so you really have to step up because that is what they're looking for.
Okay, so they know their stuff. They know what they want. They're very, what's the word I'm looking for?
Very savvy.
Yeah, like a refined, they're refined in their, they know, they've done their homework.
Yes. And,
okay, but there could be two or three, maybe not as many. I know I read somewhere that the B2B market, there's fewer people to choose from, but they've got to know their stuff than B2C, for example.
Okay, so just to clarify that, so I get what you're getting at.
Yeah.
So you're leading into a key part in terms of the buying process, business buyers, so buyers of professional services, how they buy, you're getting into a very critical point here. Fantastic. How they buy is that they do a lot of independent self-research and education. This is why I am of the view, and many others would agree, cold calling, doing what I call the show up and throw up and making the pitch does not work, because our buyers of consulting services, technology services, they will do their own research. Do their own research. And how they do their research now, Janice, has fundamentally changed. Back in 2020, 2021, around the dreaded C word time of COVID and so forth, it was, how do I solve? And people would be going on to search engines and say, how do I solve? How do I do X? Now the question now is, in 2025, who can help me solve? Who can help me enter a new market? Who can help me develop new revenue streams? Who can help me develop that new product and solution? As a result, the self-education and research, Janice, is still occurring, but they are doing so through networks, through ecosystems. They're going to industry analysts. They're talking to peers. They're becoming members of CEO advisory groups, masterminds, online communities. Mm-hmm. Often it's not uncommon for senior execs, business owners to be members of multiple groups, mastermind groups. They're going through industry publications. Who are those micro influencers, those industry experts within their industry? These are the people that they're tapping into, working with, and aligning themselves as part of that self-education and research. To the point, Janice, that when they're ready to buy, they will have already determined what their consideration set will be, and it will be very small, to your point, maybe only two or three providers, because they've done their self-education and research and have worked out, okay, I'm interested, I need help with X. And with respect to who can help me solve, I'm only interested in providers A, B, or C. So it's really understanding that buying dynamic of self-education and research, but it is about people. It is about communities and networks now. They're asking the question, who can help me solve? And it's a subtle distinction, Janice, but it has big implications for your go-to-market, for your growth strategy, because relationships, delivering value, providing opportunities to interact and engage are critical to how we will succeed in the world of professional services.
Yeah, that's a great explanation. I think that, you've got person A, B, or C, or company A, B, or C that's vying for those for that business. But to me, if they all know the same things, it all comes down to how do I build relationship? How do I build trust with these people that want these services? How do I build, even starting with rapport? It's, you know, how, and is it because you've come in through usually a warm lead, like maybe you've done business with one of their collaborators or someone in the same industry. So it's not just the content that they've done their homework on, it's the company or the people, the person in that company, would you say?
Yeah, it is very much it, I believe to yeah, it is about trust. It is about making that connection, and the way in which you do so, it is about delivering value. It is about delivering value, delivering insights. It is about engaging with them. So a lot of a big component, it's providing that thought leadership with those insights and ideas, but it's interacting, providing your prospects with opportunities to connect with other peers, to ask questions, to engage. So content and using of what I call micro events. So things like roundtables, workshops, panels, where you can bring people together, bring your prospects, your clients to interact with other service providers, other experts, where they can learn, where they can ask questions. That is where you build a dialogue. That is where you build the engagement. That is where you'll build that trust and connection. So it is the combination of the two that you need to have. Yes, you're right. It's not just about insight, but it's also not about just the warm lead. Warm leads are not enough. Warm leads will get you in the door, but then you have to deliver value. And part of delivering value is about being able to be the connector, be able to connect this prospect. They need expertise now in big data analytics. Okay, well, let me introduce you to my colleague who is the guru in data analytics. And actually, we're having a panel next week, an online panel. Why don't you come in and join and you can ask questions? It is creating connection. It's insight, connection, engagement, dialogue. It is those three together. That's how you build the trust. Because then it'll be like, I like that person. I like Janice. She's delivered value in through insight, through the questions, the discussion, and the people that she's able to in help me learn and engage and engage with. That's how the magic happens now.
I love that because I have already experienced that with you when we first spoke, that you are indeed a connector. And that's something now, is that something that you teach your clients how to be, or do, because some of us can do it and some of us it's not so easy.
It is something I am starting to teach my clients more of because Janice, in this day and age, lots of us can have lots of connections on LinkedIn, but we can be connected on LinkedIn, but we have to be connecting. And
I'm with you.
the two are very different. I don't have a massive following, but I have 6,300 connections. But there are many folks there. I have no clue who they are. But I myself try to practice what I preach. There are some key people in my network that I make it a point of making sure I'm connecting with them because the dialogue, the engagement, interaction, that's how you build a trust. That is how you do the referrals, the warm introduction. And yes, the warm introduction can massively expedite a sales process. And in B2B, our world, it's typically very long, but warm introductions combined with insight, combined with interaction, can turn a long sales cycle into just a couple meetings. And
Really?
you get the sale. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
I'll give you a live example. Myself, Janice, last year, I collaborated with another boutique strategy firm in Western Australia. We approached an IT risk management solutions company to do a joint project. Because the MD had the relationship with the CEO of the IT
Did you
risk
hear what
management
you just
firm.
said? That was all initials. Break it down.
So basically, tech company. So I'm collaborating with another strategy firm, tech company out in Western Australia. My colleague, the MD of his firm, he had a relationship with the CEO. Bottom line is, we had, because he had the relationship, he had a good relationship with the CEO. The sales process was two meetings. First meeting to have a Zoom call to get a download on, what the issues are, et cetera. Second meeting was, okay, share some insights. What would be how we would approach and do a plan of attack for them to enter the US market? And it was a two meeting sales cycle for a project that was fairly large. I'm going to be quite honest, quite lucrative. But because of relationship, warm introduction combined with insight, you know, about my approach to go to market and what we're going to do, it was a two meetings.
Fabulous.
Conversion. So
fabulous.
It definitely can work. Yeah. So that's just to give a live example of how, yes, introduction combined with you have to give value and give value of the things that are important to your client and prospects. But when you do so and creating connection, insight and connection and collaborate and engagement, that's where the magic can happen.
Yeah. So I know that you work in globally, you're working in Australia, you work in Canada, you work in the US and maybe some other places I don't know about. Are things different in the different areas?
Great question, Janice. So Australia, Canada, and the US are my three core markets.
Okay.
I'm originally from Toronto, and my business is by design by working across the three because I live here in Sydney, but being able to go back and forth across all three is something that I wanted to do so I can have the work and personal life. So looking in those three markets, Australia, Canada, and the US are fairly similar in terms of all three markets are heavily SME driven. So, you know, small businesses, our people are small, medium businesses. We are the backbones of all those economies. There's probably some subtleties in terms of how Australians do business versus Canada and the US, but fundamentally it's the same. The same principles, my approach around, you know, leveraging insight, strategy, creating relationships, being buyer driven, being client driven, all of that very much works. The importance of networks, building relationships is critical. So they're fairly similar. There's more similarities. It's subtle nuances, but fundamentally those core principles that we're talking about are valid. And again, they're needed now more than ever because we need to be connecting.
Mm-hmm. So that being said, and you know that, you know, my work, part of my work centers around LinkedIn. I'm very curious to know, I know you are a pretty good user of LinkedIn. So how do you see it helping in your business?
So LinkedIn is fantastic. So LinkedIn, is my social media platform. Some people are across many. I use LinkedIn. And then anytime I do LinkedIn lives, I'll then stream it to YouTube. But LinkedIn is my core. LinkedIn is fantastic. I built a lot of my network by LinkedIn. We were just talking about Brett Trainer, great colleague. That's one of the many relationships, many close relationships I've built through LinkedIn. So LinkedIn, through putting out content, through engaging with folks, you can build, you can get those introductions, meet new people, and then you take it off LinkedIn.
Right.
To have that initial meeting, initial conversation. So LinkedIn is a great way to gain visibility, to get some of your content out there. You just, in my view, cannot rely on LinkedIn. So it's great to get visibility, to make some connections, but then you need to take it off, first step at least to some form of, whether in person or even in person in this fashion via Zoom. I've made great business relationships here. So it is very good, but you cannot rely on it, but it is a great place that you definitely want to have visibility and be putting out your content and letting people know of the different events and things that you're doing. It's valuable, but you cannot rely on it.
Well, that's interesting that your focus also went to the visibility piece and, you know, putting out your content. And that's what a lot of people think. I think, especially today, that with the fact that the world is, you know, smaller than ever, that actually the best work can be done in the inboxes, in the DMs. And that is doing strategic searches, in my estimation, to find people. Let's say you're, you know, looking to do a project with a specific company that you have no connection to, right? And you start infiltrating by looking for who you know or who you know that knows somebody at that company and start building through the, you know, the DMs and building relationships that way. Have you ever done that kind of thing?
Yeah, look, I do use LinkedIn for strategic networking to I'm very clear because I am very much practicing what I preach. I'm quite niche down. And so I have used LinkedIn to target who are some specific folk. I have my list of key folk that I'm not connected to that I do want to start engaging with. So I have identified those people. I have Sales Navigator. I will use that. And I will often start by maybe commenting on a few things on their content. I will then reach out to them. LinkedIn voice message has been fantastic. It's an underutilized tool that many people don't use, but I've used that. And that's how I got in contact with a VP of SME bank in the US, because I reached out and I sent him a message. He's like, Michael, no one's ever sent me a message. This is pretty cool. And I said, I'm glad that's pretty cool. But then I leaded that up with value. I said, I've got my insights report here. I think you'd be interested in this. And I sent it to him. So yeah, absolutely. LinkedIn has a lot of value to be very targeted. And then if you can start to reach and start engaging with them. I do believe though at some point you need to deliver value though if you're going to want to get it to go any
Totally,
further.
but I think you have to like what you did when you asked him, you thought you had something that would be of interest for him. Ask him, can I, may I send it to you? Don't just barrage people with things, but
Oh
do it
no, oh
strategically.
no,
No,
no.
exactly.
Yeah,
But
yeah.
and also you can also video message people, and that's another tool, right? And
Yeah.
actually, I don't know, this is off topic, but we just noticed something actually today that I think you can actually attach a video message now to your
Oh, gosh.
messages, which you couldn't do on your computer before. You could only do it from your
Oh, okay.
phone. So I think I just discovered that today, but I haven't tested it yet. Anyway, there's always something. They don't tell you. LinkedIn never tells you what they're doing. It's
Yeah,
just a
this is true.
surprise, you know?
This is
Yeah,
true.
good, bad, or indifferent. Anyway, so in your experience, how can firms ensure that they stay aligned with evolving client needs without overextending themselves? Like you've got to stay on top of things, but to what extent?
Okay, and this is so I call my business Listen, Innovate, Grow because listen, innovate, grow, the three things that all businesses, but in our context, SMEs, professional service SMEs are the ones I'm focusing on. You need to be doing your listening. So you need to be doing your listening on what I call two levels. You need to be listening to the market. So having an understanding from an industry market perspective, what are the trends? What are the developments, regulations, who are the movers and shakers? What are some of those broad client customer needs? So you have to keep on the pulse of that because again, our buyers are expecting depth of expertise. They're expecting you to be industry experts. They expect you to have a degree of functional expertise. So listening to the market, being on the pulse is not an option. It's a must-have. We're all very busy, especially us as small, medium business owners. My view is that your industry and your professional associations for your key target clients you're currently serving, seeking to serve, those industry and professional associations should be your go-to because often they are the central repository for everything. Because you can get webinars, white papers, you can sign up for their newsletters, they're often having events. So, everything you need about understanding what's going on in the industry, who are the competitors, who are potential prospects, opportunities to meet and engage some of these folks, opportunities to showcase your brilliance as a service provider. All of that can start from your industry and professional associations. So I always tell my clients, start from there, register for the newsletter, attend a webinar or two. It's a one-stop shop where you can go to help really get on the pulse. The other thing, Janice, I do recommend is that you want to be out there talking to your clients and prospects and decision makers to your target clients and prospects. Asking them, and ideally you want to be doing those discussions, documenting those. A 15, 20-minute conversation on Zoom where you're recording with your clients and prospects. Where are you at? Where are you looking to go? What's missing? Where are you having challenges? What would you need? Do differently. Having those kinds of structured conversations, at least once a year, if you could do so even twice, document and record that and share that information. If you can do that with a bit of a cross section of your clients, you will get good insights as to what are their objectives, what are their pain points, what are they needing more of. You will gain insights from that. It's a simple exercise, but it's something that is always, I find, businesses are often lacking. Either they don't do it enough or they don't do it at all.
Yeah, they're just staying in touch with people is important because then you're top of mind and then, right, it's not so long in between. On a very simple example of that, I often tell a story of, and this is not the same type of business. This is like a realtor. And this is a guy I know over 15 years, bought and sold three homes to up level his family home. And he used a different realtor every single time because the others never stayed in touch. And it's just, it doesn't matter the size of the business. It's really, is that person still there? You should know who's running the show. You should be able to be top of mind so that they remember you.
Yeah, it's about being top of mind, but it is also about being disciplined, though, about, you know, spending time to really understand what's going on with
your
course.
Of course.
To your point, because if you have that depth of understanding, you know what the priorities are, what they're looking for, then you can start to generate, again, air insights, give them ideas, recommendations of things that you can send in a newsletter or just send them an article, what have you, periodically to stay top of mind, but to also in a valuable way.
Yeah, like, oh, I just read this interesting article. I thought of you. It was about blah, blah, blah.
Because the bar, I do want to emphasize,
the bar is high. I can see
is quite the expectation of our buyers is very, very high. And so you need to step up. Just staying in touch is not, it has to be value. It has to have the quality, the expertise, the bar has been raised. And I just really want to emphasize that. These folks are very busy. There's also a lot of us out there. So to stand out and to become part of that solution set, that consideration set, yes, we do want to be keeping in touch. You're absolutely right, but we want to be doing things of value. Again, advice, insights, recommendations of things that are important to them that they're thinking about now or going to be thinking about in the short term, because that's what they're looking for. And that is what will give you, you will stand out. That will is what, Janice, will enable you to go to someone who you've never met before and be able to say, because you've done your research here, I've got this article or I've just done this newsletter which talks about X of interest. They will make time. They will lean in. It's like, oh, send me, let's have a chat. That's how, you know, your cold outreach can become warm very quickly. You've got to have that insight, that value component, that relevant value component as part of it. When you do, people will pay attention. They'll take time to come to your podcast, your LinkedIn lives and so forth. Yeah. They will make the time because it is of value to them. So you're absolutely right, keeping in touch, but we have to have that value, that expertise.
Absolutely.
Recognizing the bar is very high now.
Well, what I'm hearing also though is a lot of confidence. You have to have that confidence. You have to walk the walk so that you are listened to, so that people will pay attention. And I think that's where it separates the sheep from the cows.
And Janice, you have hit the nail on the hammer, especially in his gentleman, Stu Hynek just wrote his second edition of book, How to Get a Meeting with Anyone. And he talks about us going into meetings as peers with CEOs and senior execs. And you must have that mindset. You're absolutely right. You cannot be sheepish and, meeting advice. You have to go and know we're peer to peer.
You know your stuff and you have to go in there. It's
tough, but it's so important. You've raised a very important point. You must go in with that confidence, because they'll snuff it out. If you don't have that confidence, even if you are the greatest and brilliant around cybersecurity data, you cannot exude that confidence, then you want me to spend how much with you? If you're not even sure about yourself, you want me to sign budget? You've got to go in as a, you've got to go in the mindset. I'm a CEO of my company. You're the CEO of yours. Your company just has more bodies, but we're peer to peer. You've got to think, these are my peers. You've got to go in with that mentality.
This just came to me, but I'm curious. Like, do you deal mostly with men or there are a lot of women running companies that you are in those decision-making roles that you deal with? And if so, do you have to deal with them differently?
I would have to say, given the sectors that I've picked, in many of cases, they are men that I'm dealing with. But I historically, though, in my career, I've had a lot of women as senior leaders, as senior exec leaders. Do I have to treat the two differently?
Or is it different? You know, is it different, really?
I treat them like my peers, and I always go in with either armed and you have to go in both cases armed and ready. One is not necessarily easier than the other. Okay. I just always go to my meetings armed and ready because I've dealt with tough male senior execs. I've dealt with tough women senior execs. One is not necessarily easier than the other. So just by virtue, I treat them as peer-to-peer, but I also know and I have to go in, locked in, game on. It's like, okay, I'm armed and ready, let's go.
So do you also then, as part of your business, coaching or developing small companies to go to their like it's not your end user client, it's your client's end user prospect that you're helping them get to? Or is it just strictly you to the end user company? Am I saying that?
No, I will work with the leaders of its accounting and advisory firms on their growth strategy to help them acquire what do they need to be doing in their business with respect to their strategies around acquiring clients, with their respect to how they're maintaining and growing their current client base, looking at their product offering so that they ultimately can go to their end clients that they're seeking.
Right. Okay.
So to give a live example, I was in my accounting advisory firms that I was working with here in Sydney. I worked with them on their growth strategy because they were working in many different sectors. Now we have them focusing on real estate, building and construction, and a bit of medical. So I was helping them develop to identify what are those right industry sectors, and then what are the kinds of service offerings, advisory offerings that they're going to be doing and being able to deliver and inviting and showing their thought leaderships to their clients, which are the business owners of building and construction, real estate, and medical practices.
Fascinating, actually. It's quite fascinating. You love what you do, don't you?
I very much do. I very much love what I do. I've met great people. It's meaningful work because we're learning, we're growing together. I very much about working with the client. So it's not just about writing the strategy. I turn everything to an action plan. We have our action sessions where we get into the detail of how they're going to get doing things, what's going to work. So and you get traction and you get outcomes. I've worked in big corporate for a long time where a lot of that strategy work just ended up being an academic exercise where you had these elongated planning cycles and you'd had these massive strategy decks, the 300 pages. And then by the time you were done, we have to start the next planning cycle, but nothing was accomplished.
Nothing ever gets done.
Nothing was done. We didn't get any new clients. We didn't launch that product. We didn't, there was no traction. There was no actual satisfaction and outcome, where that's not the case dealing with small, medium businesses.
So, no, there's not as much bureaucracy.
There's not as much bureaucracy. There's outcomes, there's learning, there's traction, there's momentum. So it's quite rewarding and fun too. It's a lot of work, it's fun too. So yeah, it's very rewarding. So I enjoy
how long it. How long have you been on this cycle? How long have you been doing this?
I've been an independent, Janice, since 2011. So
okay, so about the same time I started my business. But that's and it's funny because we mentioned Brett, whom you introduced me to. I mean, he's only been out from corporate for about 6 years, but it's like a different world, right? And it just opens so much up for people.
There's a lot of opportunity. Look, being an entrepreneur is not for everyone. It's a lot of work, a lot of frustration, a lot of stress. But I wouldn't have it any other way. I learned a lot in big corporate, Janice, but big corporate fundamentally wasn't for me. There were a lot of bad behaviors and things I saw in corporate that I just don't want a part of. I'm glad I had my time because that's where I learned about
Sure.
B2B research and being customer centric. But I'm going to say it now. I have no desire to go back. I've had the odd recruiter reach out. I'm like, no, I have no desire to. And I'm about empowering business owners, but empowering aspiring entrepreneurs, women and people of color in particular. That's part of my passion. So I'm driven on a purpose now, and it's beyond just revenue and making money. There are things that I want to do to have an impact. And I can only achieve that by being my own
I
boss. I
love
don't
that.
want to have to ask, oh, can I have time off? Because I'm going to Toronto, New York for 2 weeks to speak. And I'm doing a combination of working with business owners, but working with aspiring entrepreneurs. I can take a control and do that and not have to ask, oh, can I? No, this is what I'm doing. It's part of my business plan. It's part of my life plan. So I'm on a different course now that, yeah, the corporate 5 days and I have to report to, and my diary is not my own. That's just
No,
not the move because
thanks.
I've got bigger things to that I want to achieve now.
So, as this very driven entrepreneur, I hope you don't work 24/7. What do you do when you're not working?
What I do when I'm not working, a number of things. I love to cook, hang out with friends. I'm a massive track and field fan.
Oh,
Not,
really?
yes, I'm a massive track and field fan. So I'm often on YouTube watching programs of different athletes. I was watching CBC Sports today because they have a new program, Trackside, with Perdita Felician, 2004 Olympic finalist. I watch that now on Friday mornings. So yeah, I'm a big athletics fan. My close friends know, like, yeah, I'm a massive, love to travel. So yeah, there's lots of things that I do outside of work. Yeah, lots of things that I do outside of work. I go to the gym quite regularly, 4 days a week. So
Good for
yeah,
you.
life's pretty good. We put in the hours as entrepreneurs, but I do love what I do. Mondays and Fridays have no difference for me. But when I was in corporate,
Oh,
it
yeah.
was Sunday, you started to get a
Got
little
the
bit stressed in
headache and the
the
neck
evening.
ache
Yeah,
and
especially if the boss was sending in emails. And then I was like, Monday. Then you're like, Wednesday. Oh, it's hump day. And then you get to Friday. Oh, it's a weekend. Yeah. I don't have that now.
No.
Mondays, Fridays are, they're no different. I enjoy them both. So just that alone, it's not perfect. There are days that can be frustrating. And when client proposals get on hold or get rejected, it can be. But overall, I love what I do. I like to be able, the people I work with. I mean, I got to meet you. I've met so many fantastic people in different parts of the world working on great projects. So
Love it.
for me, I wouldn't have it any other way.
Fantastic. Just going to ask you something now. It's gone out of my head. I was just going to. Oh, I know what it was. It was one of my last questions for you, and I've got a couple. But this one is, so how do you like to learn best? Do you learn best by like video, TV, movies, by reading real books, by audio? What do you like to do?
I'm a very big proponent about continuous learning. So I do that through a variety of ways. Some reading of articles. So I have a bunch of Google alerts about various things. I will watch videos as well. I do listen to some podcasts as well. So it's probably a bit of a mix. A fair bit of reading, watching videos, podcasts. Yeah, it's a mix.
And
Yeah.
do you have relaxing kind of things there, or is it all business related?
In terms of my video, oh, my YouTube has got lots of leisure stuff.
Cooking probably a
Cooking
lot.
channels, there's tons of athletic stuff. I've got Guy Fieri, Diners, Drive-In, and Dives. I always watch a bit of that on weekend. Yeah, I've got a lot of stuff on YouTube. I do a lot of mindsets work as well. I'm big on that. So I've got Anthony Robbins, Myron Golden are my two big ones, Simon Sinek.
I love
Yeah,
Simon
there's a
Sinek.
lot of stuff on my YouTube. I have a lot of YouTube channels that I subscribe to, quite a bit.
Fantastic. All right, last question. If a firm was going to start using your AIR technique or your strategies right away, what's the first small step that they should take? They haven't done anything with that type of thing before. They're brand new.
Well, the first step, because the airframe is part of my overall go-to-market strategy framework. So that's kind of it. Air is the kind of underlying principle. But the first thing they need to be doing is A, get clear on their goals and vision, listening to you. So that's step one. Get clarity on what are our goals, vision, and align. What are we trying to do? Then secondly is to then do a bit of an audit to see what do they know and understand in terms of that listening to the market. So what do you know around the industries and markets, both those you currently serve and those that you're seeking to serve? And then thirdly, it's to do a bit of an audit with regards to, well, what do you know around your current clients and prospects in terms of who makes the decision, what are their priorities, and how they buy? Can you answer those questions as of right now, today? So that audit across those three, to you have clarity of your goals and where you're headed, and then what do you know about at that market level and then at that client slash buyer level? Doing an audit there will show you where the gaps are, and then you can start there on filling in, doing that listening, that market industry market competitor research, what client interviews, discussions, things you need to be doing to fill those gaps. Because you can't innovate and know where to focus until you've done that listening and you kind of know the lay of the land. And we have to know it at that buyer level, which is very important.
Right. And I'm sure you're not surprised, but maybe when you start with somebody with a company like that who doesn't have those answers, they're obviously... you know, a good client, a good prospect for you, but oh my God, how have they managed so far?
And they've made a lot of assumptions, and we have to get past this assumptions, because it's getting into some of that detail is where you're going to get the magic happens.
Right.
And Jen, you don't need massive budgets to undertaking this work. You know, talking to clients, you know, it's take a cross section. I always say, ideally, let's take a cross section of your current clients, some that love you, ones that have been a bit difficult. And let's talk to a few prospects of ones you don't have that you want to have, because then you kind of get a quasi-market view of the decision makers to understand where they're at, what are their priorities, why do they buy, why haven't they bought, what is it going to take in terms of a prospect for them to come on board. For the ones that are quite irritated, you know, what has to change to make sure that they don't walk. You get a very clear view, and you'll get some clear insights on where you need to focus, on where you need to business innovate and make those major or minor increments and improvements within your business.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your insights. How can people find you? I will put it in the show notes. I think I have it here, but just go ahead and tell my audience.
LinkedIn. I'm always very active on LinkedIn. So reach out, connect with me on LinkedIn. And secondly, they can go to my website, listeninnovategrow.com. There's actually a free playbook, my go-to-market playbook for B2B professional service firms. I'll give you a different link. I'll send that to you, Janice.
Okay.
And it's a free download, and it talks through all the different steps, the components, the AIR framework, your overall approach to go to market, which is on one slide, which is it's fairly simple to understand, but you have to work through it.
Okay.
And how you're listening. So it's fairly comprehensive, and it'll be a good starting point for organizations that really want to get more clients, making sure they're keeping and growing the ones that they have, and so that they can move towards having the growth and impact that they seek.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Janice.
My pleasure. I'd just like to wrap by saying to my audience that I think that your perspective is a refreshing reminder that growth doesn't come from guessing what clients want. It comes from listening deeply, innovating strategically, and focusing on real client value. And in a world where B2B relationships can easily become transactional, your approach, your AIR framework, offers a path toward meaningful, sustainable growth. So to my audience, if you're a business leader looking to attract and retain the right clients, this conversation could be a great roadmap. Thanks for tuning in. And remember that we continue to explore how strong relationships are at the heart of lasting business success. And I like to always say to stay connected and be remembered. So thank you. Thank you. Thanks for joining us. If today's show inspired you to make a new connection, why not start with me? Head over to LinkedIn and connect with me. Be sure to let me know you are a podcast listener, because I select one listener each month who connects with me on LinkedIn for a complimentary profile audit. And you know, I love to meet new people, so I hope you take me up on it. Don't forget to stay connected and be remembered.